Session number 26579.
Mr. Clark, rail 5. We were talking about your time at Nook Camp, where, when your battalion was the demonstration battalion. Now, I believe you ran into the winter months there, and you've got a bit of a story about that, if you tell us about that.
Yeah, that's quite correct. We were preparing, and the battalion was reinforcing, ready to go abroad. And the January of 1947, beginning of January, end of December, beginning of January 47, the weather turned absolutely atrocious. So much so that all units virtually in the area where we were stationed on Salisbury Plains were sent off on leave. Our Colonel Eric Brickman, he said no way was my battalion going on leave. They've already had enough leave. And that we would go out and forage for our winter fuel. And this we did. He got the adjutant to liaise with the farmers in the area to allow us to come round and not fell trees, but to pick up the trees already on the ground, all the timber that was on the ground, we could salvage. And we brought back to Nook Camp. And this was the fuel for our fires in our huts. Now, at first, everyone was a bit despondent about this, you know, why couldn't we get a bit of leave, like, you know. But with the heavy falls of snow, we actually relished the going out foraging. For the simple reason, we had so much fun, snow fights, etc. And it put a lot of colour on our cheeks. We got back to camp in the evening and we were absolutely starving. And as luck would have it, we had a good team of cooks in the cookhouse who fed us exceptionally well. And we were just young 18 and 19 year olds frolicking about in the snow and thoroughly enjoying it. And at the same time, keeping ourselves very warm in the huts at night. When the bad weather abated, the decent weather came in, then all the units started to come back. And needless to say that there was no more demonstrations for us after that. We had the advance party of the Seaforth Highlanders, who were taking over from us, arrived, and we were in the process of handing over the various demonstration duties to the Seaforth.
Now, what was the process of handing over to the Seaforth? I mean, you were a bit junior then, you might not have known, but
yep.
How was it all done?
The process was very simple, actually. What we did was, we carried on doing demonstrations, but with them, the Seaforth Advance Party, alongside us. And we instructed them as to what happened in the various demonstrations. And the Advance Party of the Seaforth, the officers and it was mainly all senior NCOs. They were trained by us how to conduct the various demonstrations. When that was finished, we then concentrated on getting packed up, ready to go abroad.
Now, what would you take with you? Would you take everything with you, or what?
We took everything with us, except weapons. We packed all our equipment, clothing and equipment, and on the 14th of February, we embarked on a troop ship called the HMT Almanzora. Almanzora, A-L-M-A-N-Z-O-R-A, Almanzora. Now, this troop ship was a very, very old ship, and it only held the battalion, no more nor no less. We were very, very contained in that. And as I say, on the 14th of February 1947, we set sail from Southampton, and it took us 7 days to arrive in Gibraltar.
Now, what were conditions like on this old troop ship? Sometimes they were a bit rough.
The conditions were very, very cramped, but the fact was that we were very strictly disciplined, inasmuch as it were to keep our troop decks absolutely spotless. This was paramount, that inspections were held every morning, very, very stringent inspections, and we were sleeping in hammocks, in actual fact. Now, that was some experience. Having not been to sea before, we got into some state, all our young soldiers, there was hammocks getting put up, and as you climbed into them, they turned turtle, and you landed back on the deck again. So it took us about 2 days training to get used to our hammocks so that we could get a decent night's sleep.
Were they comfy once you got used to them?
Well, they were very comfortable. Once you got used to them, it was just every bit as good as sleeping on a mattress. Possibly in many ways even better than sleeping in a mattress or a bed.
Now, what were the inspections like? What were the cleaning routine for your mister?
In fact, we ate, slept in the troop deck, and all the troop decks had all the pots and pans were all laid out in the troop deck, and before every meal, the troop deck orderlies, so many men detailed, who would go to the galley and would fetch all the food back in these containers. And there were, each table, I'd say about 8 to 10 men at a table. And the containers would be put at the end of each table, and you were served by an NCO from there. When the meal was over, then the containers were taken into a cleaning room and thoroughly washed and dried and placed again in the troop deck, on the troop deck. The inspections in the morning were by the company commander, who would come round and inspect the troop deck. Now, as I said, his inspection was absolutely stringent, for obvious reasons. They were living such close proximity. Hygiene was of the utmost. And it's amazing, it's typical of British soldiers, we can adapt so easily. Although we were only on board 7 days on the ship, we managed to adapt extremely well. Every morning we had to go on boat stations for boat drill, which entailed every company lining up in their various boat stations with your life belts on. You would find that also an officer would come along and inspect to make sure that your life jacket was properly secured. Once the lifeboat stations were finished, then we were more or less finished for the day. We maybe get a series of lectures, because certainly there was no room to train on the ship. You couldn't do any weapon training. So we were subjected to lectures by certain members of the battalion.
Now, what would the lectures be on? What sort of thing were you doing with them?
Well, any subject. The one big thing they always liked to teach about was regimental history. They would teach about regimental history. Or, as I think I mentioned before, Army Bureau of Current Affairs things, keeping us up to date with what was happening in the outside world. And this was about all that we had room for. The only thing at night would be maybe tombola would be organised on the troop deck, probably run by a colour sergeant or sergeant major, who would organise sessions of tombola. I can't ever remember seeing a film or anything on that ship, because it was so antiquated that there was no great facilities for entertainment. However, we managed to cope all right. We thoroughly, in actual fact, almost to a man, every one of us, this was our first adventure at sea.
I was going to ask, what about seasickness? Was that a problem?
Some chaps did become a bit seasick, but we were lucky in this respect that the weather was very calm all the way out. We didn't have any massive waves or the ship heaving about, and I think this managed to keep the seasickness to a very low level. I know I certainly wasn't seasick, or any of my friends, but we did hear the odd guy retching over the side or in the toilets, but it was very, very rare. Later on, however, I did experience really rough weather.
Now, anything else about the voyage? You were off to Gibraltar, weren't you?
Yeah. When we arrived at Gibraltar, each company had, it wasn't just one barracks. We had various camps in the Gibraltar. My company, C Company, we were detailed to go to a little a camp called Little Bay Camp. Little Bay Camp. Now this was on the west side of the rock, and our task was to guard German prisoners. In the camp, which was wired, totally wired, searchlights placed out there, there was approximately 500 German prisoners of war, all Afrika Korps. Now, the vast majority of these prisoners were from the east zone of Germany. And as there was so much trouble in the east zone, virtually the start of the Cold War, the authorities, quite correctly, did not rush these men back to Germany for the simple reason a lot of them didn't know where their families were. Their families had to be traced, and sadly, on many occasions, we were called in to cut down some of these prisoners from the toilets. They'd hang themselves because a lot of the families didn't survive the war. And when these men were told this, then obviously having been 5 years in captivity and then having no family or prospects to go home to, that was the end for them. And we had quite a fair old amount of suicides in this camp.
Tell me about the guard duties. Were you actually on guard duty?
What happened was this, that within the compound, prisoner compound, there was a British staff, administration staff, commanded by a major. Now all these men were very, very fluent in German, and they administered the prisoners. Now the prisoners were allowed to come out to work in our dining hall, work in the sergeant's mess, and sundry other jobs in the stores, etc. But whilst they were out, they got the run of our camp, our part of the camp, but they couldn't get out the main gate because we had a guard on the main gate. So these prisoners were quite happy to work. I know I worked in the sergeant's mess for several weeks, and we had two of them worked in there, and they were excellent guys.
How did you get on generally with the German POWs?
Very well indeed. We got on very well indeed. There was no animosity, and the Germans, for their part, had enough of fighting. Because most of them had been spent 5 years in the Afrika Korps fighting in the desert, in the Western Desert, and they were very, very subdued by this time.
So it was friendly both ways.
Friendly both ways. The camp staff, the permanent staff in the camp, they also helped. They were very, very helpful, in as much as they liaised between our company officers and the German prisoners. And as a result, a tremendous friendly spirit arose. And I don't ever remember any problems whatsoever with these Germans. Now then, at a certain time, our commanding officer, as I mentioned, he was a very, very strict man.
Well, tell us a bit about him, because what you've mentioned, it's his Colonel Eric Brickman. What was he like? Tell us.
Brickman was a very strict man. His presence was pretty awesome. When you were in his presence, you felt he was pretty overpowering. He was a very strict disciplinarian. He had had a hard war. He won the DSO during the war. But he was of the old school that discipline was paramount, and that he would brook no ill discipline. However, he proved that he was a very, very humane man, very humanitarian, in as much as this, that he got the officers of the battalion together and he explained that he felt it was terrible that these men should still be in captivity and that they should be allowed certain freedoms to leave camp, go into the town. And eventually he got permission to open the gates to these German prisoners of war, and they were allowed to out into Gibraltar to be back. I think they'd be back somewhere in the region of 8 or 9 o'clock in the evening. But once they had finished their duties within the camp, they were allowed out from, I think it was about tea time, half four in the afternoon, till about 8 or 9 o'clock at night. And when this happened then, the wire netting came down, that the Germans were no longer incarcerated in the camp. It became a pretty open camp.